Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Danilo's free. And he goes to get one.
First time we've seen them attack them, and that's Branson! Well, that's what I wanted to see Robinson do.
Taylor won, he scores! And the sticky ground goes ballistic!
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Red Sideless Trent. And hello, viewers, on this Sunday morning. Sorry, running a little late. It's kind of my fault, but fine. I'm joined by Adam Wicklow, Reece Lane, and Lee Clark as we dissect Nottingham Forest's 4-2 defeat at Aston Villa, which took place yesterday and leaves the Reds 16th in the table thanks to results elsewhere. Not great, but we'll hop into it straight away. Reece, I'll start with you. So we'll kick off the team. And there's only one change, really, but it was for Nuno Tavares, who was now out for weeks, apparently. But it was more the issue of the person who replaced him. So obviously, Moussa Niakate came in for him instead of Harry Toffolo, which says quite a lot in its own regard. I mean, on the one hand, I sort of thought that, you know, he's doing that because Niakate is a much faster player, and obviously to try and replicate Tavares' speeds, maybe that's what he was trying to think, go along the lines of. But bold change. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was odd when the team came out, because with respect, you know, we always say round pegs and round holes, don't we? So why you play the centre back at left back when you've got a left back on the bench, I just can't fathom personally. You know, it's kind of easier to say because of what's happened, but Toffolo's got to play for me. I mean that you're getting to the point of, you know, like with United last season where they were playing Luke Shaw at centre half when Harry Maguire was sat on the bench. You're kind of thinking, you know, are they done? Does the manager not fancy that player at all? So and Nuno obviously realised he messed up as well, which does happen because he made the change at half time. I did say to the guys before we come on here, if he had been in situ quite a lot longer, I think he probably would have made the change earlier, to be honest, and dragged, well, any of the centre-backs or Niakate off, really. So, you know, I'm not going to kind of put the blame on Niakate because it's just not a left-back, is he? I mean, I think Steve Cooper played in there against Brentford, didn't he? He got himself sent off. So it was, yeah, ended up being a bit of a one from the manager didn't work out. And it's kind of a shame on Tavares because he's a player who looks like he's just got going. He's built up a really good relationship with Callum Hudson-Odoi. I know people on social media are very split on him. And you could just see that left side was a bit of a mess in the first half. And it's a case of another player who's getting going injured again, which sums up our kind of form, doesn't it? So, yeah, it turned out to be the wrong selection. I think Nuno realised, and in his post-match as well, I think he'd kind of know they'd messed up, but yeah, kind of a shame really because we got hammered down at left side in the first half.
Badly, yeah. In fact, it took all of 4 minutes for them to really exploit it, Lee. I mean, on the one hand, you have to say that Leon Bailey played tremendously well and probably deserved man of the match. But it was just so easy. It's the ball into space, you know, and then, you know, it's just... it's a complete mess. I mean, probably the first goal.
Yeah, like you say, it's just complete mess, and it's no coincidence that everything came, you know, down that side. I think what I would say, and I don't want this to sound too detrimental, but I think it's a case of everyone screaming for Toffolo to play because he's the natural option there. But with Leon Bailey in that form, there's no saying that Villa still wouldn't have run ragged. We've said before on this podcast that Toffolo, as good as he's been when he's been called upon this season, he's a very steady performer. But against the better sides in the division, he can, you know, be found wanting. So there's no saying that if Toffolo had played, we would have still got battered down that side. But I think it'd have been easy to kind of comprehend if you start the game in the proper fashion and go with the round pegs in the round holes. But yeah, it was just interesting, really, because obviously Watkins didn't really get a sniff, did he, in the home game at our place. And obviously for a centre forward who just loves scoring goals, you that would have hurt him. I think that he played a team like Forest who was struggling at the time and he barely got a kick of the ball. He certainly didn't get a clear-cut chance to score. And obviously, Charity FC, I suppose, if you want to call it, for want of a better phrase, 4 minutes in and he's at the score sheet. So, yeah, it was just a mess all around and it wasn't helped by Nuno making that decision to play Niakate there.
No, absolutely not. It was just painful, that goal. I mean, even it was just like watching it in slow motion, like just one thing after another. Obviously, Niakate was exposed. And then, you know, Murillo gets done by Bailey. And then Felipe gets the ball put through his legs when he leaves a gaping hole trying to block his... It's just one thing after another. And obviously, Watkins is just there on hand. There's nothing Sells can do for that or any of the goals, really.
Although when you play a team like Aston Villa as well, I mean, we say it before, it's a bit cliched, but in this league, if you're not at it from the off in certain games, there's certain games that you play against the teams, probably every team in the bottom half of the league, you might get away with a bit of a slow start, but against any of those teams in the top half, never mind ones pushing for a Champions League place, if you're not at it from the minute go, especially on their own pitch, then you're just going to get punished, and we got royally punished yesterday.
He did fluff that header into your ass. That, can you remember that?
Yeah, he had the sniff into the header.
This is, I mean, like we were saying, this is what we're saying in the preview pod with me and Adam with Seb. Like, ultimately, Aston Villa are fourth in the league, and we're 16th. They're going to expect to win that game, and they were set about going like, right, we need to right the wrongs of what's happened before. We'll go at them. That's what they did. And Adam, it wasn't even long till, you know, there was just a constant threat. Like Forest just didn't start the game at all. I mean, someone said that, obviously, I said at half time, and a few people said, oh, what about the Fulham game? It might have a fair point, especially in the second half. But at least in the first half, Forest competed for 20 minutes. That was the worst first half I've seen from Forest since that Stoke game on the Hewton. It was absolutely abject. And we just didn't start. We didn't get going whatsoever. It was just like, it was a training exercise for Villa at times. And, you know, Watkins has one cleared off the line by Niakate. We don't listen to any warnings whatsoever. And lo and behold, the second goal, Adam, is pretty much exactly the same as the first. Passed into the space, put across, and then, you know, a few more dilly-dallying in the box. But ultimately, it falls to Douglas Luiz, who just strokes it home. But surely Forest has to learn their lessons better than that, because that's just pathetic in every aspect.
I thought it was worse against Everton at home, to be fair, Christian, where we couldn't string five passes together. Yeah, that second goal is like schoolboy kind of defending. Dominguez and Danilo both drawn towards Jacob Ramsey in the penalty box, who me and Reece spoke about had time in the penalty area to look over his shoulder, have a half turn and play what is a good pass. To see that and have the vision and execution to Douglas Luiz, but how you two centre midfielders are completely drawn to the ball is beyond me, because if one of them is switched on a little bit, they cut the ball out and we're off on our way on the counter-attack. Jacob Ramsey causes loads of problems by occupying that inside space and completely pinned our centre midfielders back. Like, no, we didn't know what to do. And I was saying to Reece as well, like, I'd love to listen to a coach like how to counteract that, other than like making your right back basically get up the field. But we just didn't get on the ball. Villa just overran us completely, and that was like the reminder of like from last season where we was getting overrun in midfield constantly. John McGinn and Douglas Luiz just had the freedom to do whatever they want. I mean, I didn't really like feel like Tielemans was in the game too much until the second half, but he obviously got a standing ovation, was obviously very good, but I didn't really realise he was playing, but he was obviously having an effect as well, and I didn't notice. But yeah, just completely overran, easy goal, 2-0, and you kind of go, it's game over now, even before the third has gone in. Yeah, just real, real slow start. I don't know what, chalk and cheese from last week.
I think that's a frustrating thing. I mean, I get some of these players are young, so they're going to be inconsistent. But it was just so bizarre, like the contrast. It was just like watching 11 bodies on the field. It didn't look like watching a football team. I think like at least in Everton, where, yeah, okay, we were exceptionally poor, but at least we were trying to play football, fair enough, very badly. But there wasn't even that at Villa. There wasn't anything. It was just lifeless. It was a pretty much a perfect reminder of the Chris Hughton era when fans started coming back into the stadiums. It was just completely lifeless performance. There was just nothing. And
we've got a huge tendency when we're bad, like especially defending, where we just don't track runners whatsoever. Mm. And Aston Villa, I found this season, are one of the better sides for a late runner into the box. Like Douglas Luiz scored like what? Nearly double figures from central defensive midfield because that's what he does, and he's a good technical player.
Yeah, it's just immensely frustrating. And obviously, Reece, I mean, it wasn't game over then, it certainly was not long after. Again, down that side, it's just simple cross into the box, and again, haven't tracked the man very well. It's just, you know, this is kind of the issue I had early on in the season when we had the whole Turner and Blackadimus debate, because it wouldn't really matter who's in goal. If you're going to keep giving away chances like that, it doesn't make any difference. You could have Iker Casillas on performance-enhancing drugs, and he's still conceding three goals in that first half. So just because of stupid, stupid errors.
I mean, Villa are a very good side. You know, McGinn and Douglas Luiz are really good central midfielders at this level. And to be fair to them, they smelt a little bit of blood, didn't they? And they took it. It is easy, Christian. I agree. It's a superb ball from McGinn. If we're putting a cross in like that, like Hudson-Odoi for Wood at Brentford, we're saying how good it is. It was perfectly on the money, and it's a free header for Douglas Luiz. He can't miss. He doesn't miss. You know, he's a player in form. Like Adam said, I think he's got 8 for the season. In the Premier League, although just take penalties, but that's another discussion. But you know, and then you kind of at that stage fearing that this is going to be a thrashing. You're kind of thinking in the back of your mind, what's the biggest score we've been done by since we've been back to the Premier League? I think it is Man City wanted 6-0. If quote me if I'm wrong on that, and you're kind of thinking, is it going to get to that level? I mean, as well, I think there was like a huddle then. I'm not sure you guys haven't seen the full game. So Gibbs White got all the players in a huddle after that because they literally looked like a team of strangers. And, you know, I was kind of watching like, how can it be from last week where we've made one change to this week? They're just all looking around at one another like it was a team of strangers. And to be fair, that, I mean, as we're going to come on to, that huddle actually, I think, gives like, say, like, what the hell was going on? That actually kickstarted us into life a little bit.
Well, I mean, it can get much worse. But thankfully, yeah, they did. I mean, despite offering absolutely nothing all half, I mean, we amazingly scored from a corner, which, you know, grateful in. Only the third goal this season we scored from a set piece. Obviously, Big T heads it across goal and Nia Carter is on hand to sort of tap home. But, I mean, that's surely a positive. And maybe we shouldn't hang Simon Rusk and Trent Bridge just yet, despite what people were saying with some of our defending in recent weeks. But, yeah.
Yeah, you've stolen my thunder. I was just thinking while we were talking then. I mean, I was just thinking of some of the comments that I've seen. And after the Newcastle game, when we conceded a set piece again, it's, oh, Simon Rusk needs sacking and this, that and the other. I suppose based on Forest fans and their nature to flip-flop, I suppose we should give him a knighthood now because we've scored from a set piece. So, yeah, a positive for certain in a game where they were few and far between, certainly a first half where it was the only positive. So, yeah, it was nice to score from a set piece. And I mean, it's again, it's cliched, but that's how easy it is. It sounds like the sort of thing you say on a Sunday morning, doesn't it? When you score a goal and it's dead, it looks dead simple. But that's how easy it is to, I was watching Match of the Day, and Everton have scored like 15 from set pieces, and look where they are in the league. They're lower than us. So it is a simple thing. If you're working on it in training, it should be a simple thing to do more often than we are. So yeah, absolutely a massive positive. And I guess to a certain extent, I'm pleased it was Niakate that scored, because as much as he had an absolutely tragic first half, it's this notion with some Forest fans that one bad performance against a really good side playing out of position, you're not good enough. Football doesn't work like that. I mean, it's one of those things. He probably doesn't like playing left back. It might be one of those positions where he hates playing, but he thinks, you know what, I'm getting a shirt for the club, I'll give it my best shot. And it didn't work out for him yesterday, so it was nice to see him score.
But definitely,
that was his 300th Premier League goal, that was, according to Match of the Day, Niakate's. Mm. And a question for you all is, can you remember a Forest player scoring with their chest before? Would it be maybe the first one I can think of? But I do have a feeling Rafik Jabor kicked it onto his kind of chest when he scored his goal.
Oh, Yeovil?
Yeah. But I couldn't really remember one.
No, so
maybe anybody in the comments, if you can remember one, someone, a Forest player scoring with their chest, maybe a bit of a quiz question for you.
Oh, definitely. Well, they all count, and thankfully that one did. And yeah, I mean, Adam, three subs at half time. Obviously, Toffolo, Origi, and Omar Bamadele came on for Felipe, Murillo, and Taiwo. Obviously, Toffolo going to left back, Andy O, and Niakate going to centre back. And obviously, Origi going to the right wing, which he seems to be doing. Done quite a few bit recently. We'll cover that later, how he sort of goes to the right wing and Alanga goes up front. But I mean, he worked instantly. I mean, absolutely outstanding ball from Origi into Gibbs White, and he just keeps, he's the calmest man in the stadium, and suddenly Forest are back in the game.
Yeah, I kind of said to myself, like, if we can get a early second half goal, then it's game on. I think we kind of got a bit further up the pitch, 5-10 yards up further. We got stuck in straight away, and I think that's something that Divock Origi offers that Taiwo maybe can't, which is that bit of technical ability and an eye for a pass, because it is a great reverse ball and Gibbs White's in, and you're kind of thinking at one point that he's going to put the ball in the net and the flag's going to go up. But no, his run's timed to absolute perfection, and it's a great instinctive finish just to lift it over Emi Martinez. And yeah, it's game on, and something that you'd like to see from Gibbs White a lot more, but it's just, it's not always easy for him to get into those sort of positions, it seems. But yeah, it was great. And I proper had my tail up. I was thinking, like, we've got an absolute chance here, because obviously Aston Villa made a key change in taking Pau Torres off, who I thought was excellent in the first half for Aston Villa. It completely stopped and nullified every attack we had, I think. So we smelt a bit of blood, I was hoping, but obviously what happened, and I won't steal anyone's thunder, but it was to be. Not just a bit of a consolation, but nice to score another two goals, I guess. If anyone wants to put a positive spin on this, that loss, we've scored more than Arsenal and Man City combined at Villa Park this season.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many teams have scored twice at Villa Park, but again, it's just another annoying incident of Forest scoring twice and not winning the game. And Reece, he very nearly was 3-3. I mean, straight after. And again, another fantastic ball from Origi. I mean, we go back to the goal. Was it Matty Cash, Keith and Gibbs White on side, which is quite nice of him. Cheers for that, mate.
Yeah,
again, another great ball from Regan. Alanga just has so much more time than I think he realises. And I mean, at that point, you know, the crowd are gone. Like, they were like on the ropes massively. If he at least gets that on target or scores, which I actually felt he could have taken maybe two or three more touches at that point, rather than just shooting as quickly as he did. But what did you make of that? Because for me, he has to at least hit the target from that position where he's played in like that, because he's ahead of the back line.
Is that to me or Lee? Because you said kind
sorry,
of
sorry, Lee. Sorry.
Okay. Lee was primed and ready. Yeah, it was kind of a bit of like the boxing analogy, wasn't it? Where you kind of get him battered and all of a sudden, you know, you get a punch from the gods and the other guy's back on the ropes again. And yeah, there was a little bit on the ropes because they kind of sat off a bit after that. You know, second, and I'm not going to swear, but it was like, yeah, the swear word for poo, let's say. and then obviously we clip ball over Tock and Alanga's in, and that's where, that's the frustration with Elanga, that's where he needs to kind of, his rawness, obviously, with his youth, where he needs to show some composure and control the ball and take that through on goal. Because, you know, they were at kind of sixes and sevens then, and they kind of, we missed that chance. And then all of a sudden they was like, right, we've got away with one there. Let's get, you know, back on the horse. And the, to be fair, Tielemans should have scored for them, hit the post. He should have really scored there. And then, as we'll come on to, they did win it. But, I mean, that just shows you the Premier League, doesn't it? Even the sides who are up the higher ends of the table, they can be completely cruising the game. And then all of a sudden, you get a goal back and on another back. And the swing of momentum puts any team under pressure. We saw that on the opening day with Arsenal, pretty much controlled the game. We get one back on the counter with Elanga and Tyro. And then there was, you know, retreated a bit. So it's just such a shame because, you know, realistically, did we kind of expect a result there yesterday? No. But it's just the disappointment is always in the manner of the goals, and that showed by, as we're going to come on to, the goal what completely killed it. And the fourth goal, when that killed the game, as it did, like with the Newcastle home game, they got the third through Bruno Guimaraes, and that killed it. And it's just a shame we just keep killing games for ourselves with errors. So I'll let Lee take it away.
Yeah, it was... It's wicked, but Elanga's got five goals this season. I mean, he could have had a brace last week, the volley. I mean, fair enough, he takes that very well, but it's more the one-on-one he really should have done better with. I mean, Lee, that ball's probably sat in your back garden. I'm surprised he probably made its way up to Upper Trent, that one-on-one miss last week. Dear me. But it's just like, you know, the guy's got five Premier League goals this season. I think with a bit more composure, even like you said, Reece, he could easily be on double figures. Like, it's... And yeah, like he just has so much more time than he realises there. He could even run towards it. If he doesn't shoot then, he could even lure Martinez out and just square it over. I think there was someone coming in the other side.
Yeah, what I kind of noticed with Elanga as well is when he gets like one good chance, he seems the first time fluff it. And then the second time, he kind of learns from that mistake. I mean, you look at the Newcastle one where he should have squared it. He squared it the second time, he squared it toward... There is another example, Newcastle at home as well. He had the chance where he was one-on-one, hit it straight to the keeper, gets another one-on-one, second time round, puts it in the net. But he is a young lad and you're going to get that from him. But he'll probably look back at that chance and be kicking himself, really.
Massively, yeah. And like you said, obviously, Villa then. I thought, to be fair, we don't really like praising the opposition too much, but I thought they controlled the game very well after that. That was sort of, at that point, like you said, it was like, they just sort of went no more, and they took the sing out of the game so well. They just slowed the tempo right down, and then like you said, Williams gets caught out, and we're very fortunate Tielemans hits the post, and then Lee. I mean, but again, the fourth goal that kills the game is just completely of our own making. I mean, what is Dominguez doing with that pass to Omamadele, who's got no choice but to just very quickly just get it out? He can't. Yeah, there's no time to sort of take a touch or turn or anything like that. It's an underhit, awful ball, and of course it's rushed straight upon. He's the one that gets the blame for it. Although I did find it very odd to think that Paul Taylor blame Sells for that goal, which I think that's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's a bit done by the ricochet, but it's not really his fault. But talk me through the fourth goal and your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, I don't think Dominguez, from the bits that I saw, I don't think Dominguez was particularly good yesterday. I think starting to learn with Dominguez, he kind of has, again, he's probably still in the phase of, because he was in the team and then he's gone out of the team, he's kind of still, you can still cut him a little bit of slack in terms of he's still getting up to this level of football, coming across different sides that play different sort of styles of football. So we might have to accept that for a little bit. But yeah, like you say, it was just a stupid pass in the first place. And then I didn't know that Paul Taylor had blamed Sells, to be honest with you. Wow. A lot of wrong things happen before it gets to the goalkeeper. But I go back to what I've said before, and it's not just Paul Taylor. Lots of Forest fans, if a keeper's, you know, remotely involved, then it's got to be his fault. I mean, I know that has been the case a lot this season, but it certainly wasn't for me in this instance. Like you say, I think he doesn't do a lot wrong, other than essentially grasping the ball. But to be fair, he's put under a lot of pressure from the Villa player. The ricochet kind of does him. And I just think, excuse me, I just think it's one of those things where the keeper kind of does all he can. I don't think he can do anything else. So, yeah, just, again, architects of our own downfall, I suppose.
Do you know for me, if I could just interject, is I'm a Mamadiele should just put foot through, ball into Rosehead, and then absolute bollock Dominguez ball.
I agree with Adam as well. I think Amabadadeli's...
Dominguez has completely sold him short, but Amabemadile has a chance to get rid, and he tries to play out further back because he's obviously been told to do that, and he's then under hit a pass, and it's just picked off by Tielemans. But yeah, if he gets rid of it through Rosehead, then he's got every right to just go at Dominguez and say, the heck are you trying to do to me?
It was a cliche hospital ball, wasn't it, what they used to say? But for Amabemadile then to that next pass, and then it just looks a mess, doesn't it? I mean, it ends up with him wrestling with Watkins and falling over. The keeper's come out and it's kind of bobbled, fortunately for them, I guess. You know, there might be people who say, could the keeper come out a bit quicker and probably a bit firmer and kind of gone through Watkins to win the ball? But we just make it look a mess again, don't we?
It's annoying because it's
almost straight him.
Being honest, the goal, I don't actually think the goal, it's funny because it's actually very similar to the one that United scored against us. Danilo's obviously shouted for the ball, but there's a player who's willing to nip in. Mm. Amabemadile's gone to play the short pass instead of just sticking it into Rosehead or wherever up the pitch, and someone's nipped him and ended up conceding. We're almost conceding the same goals, aren't we?
Well, it looked to me like Danilo, player nipped in and Danilo was like, what are you doing to me, kind of thing, you know what I mean? Yeah, I get every team wants a lot. I mean, they want to play the Guardiola way and playing out from the back, but sometimes you just got to clear your lines, haven't you? And just making mistakes. It's just so frustrating, especially in a game at 3-2 when you're in the game. If we'd have kept it at 3-2 for as long as we could have, and we was right in the game. And if we'd have nicked a point, we would have felt we'd bleeding robbed them one way. So
it would have been like a win.
You know, like I said, you know, realistically, I mean, Villa would have been favourites with the bookies yesterday. Realistically, I don't think any of us, you know, if someone goes, here's £1,000, put that on a result yesterday, I think most 99% of people would have expected Villa to win. But it's just the manner from our perspective, how we concede the goals. That's what's killing us. If we'd have got beat, for example, let's say 1-0 yesterday, and they produced a really good move and they've cut us open, you kind of hold your hands up. I mean, the example I always use is the Tottenham home game last season, where we played really well. We lost 2-0 and people said, well, I know we left Harry Kane bleeding unmarked, but we've kind of had a go and we played well and we're giving it, but we just give so many soft goals. And that's the reason why we're down at the bottom, because attacking-wise, under Nuno, as I said in the previous pod, we can score goals against anybody. It's just defensively, we are the exact same as we've been all season, really, and that's poor.
It's hugely frustrating. I do feel a bit from that, to be fair. I mean, obviously, you're right, he could just bang it away. I feel like he's tried to do the right thing in terms of playing the ball up the field and get Forrest moving, but he's just been caught out. But it's, again, likewise, you go to the root cause of the issue. He should never have been in that position to begin with because he's sold short by Dominguez. So it's just immensely frustrating. But Adam, I mean, even then at the end, even at 4-2, Forrest still had two opportunities to get back into the game. The first one was to Hudson-Odoi, who very unfortunately slipped as the ball came to him. Because I thought that was going goal bounds when that fell to him. I was like, he's tucking that in bottom corner here. But obviously, no, the footballing gods decided no. And he slips over. But the second one, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, obviously, I don't want this to be like a witch hunt because I know what people are going to say, but how has Ryan Yates not hit the target from there? Someone please explain that to me. I feel like that was probably, out of all the chances in the game, we've had open goals in that match. Now it's probably up there as one of the best chances in the match. And yet he sliced it pretty much into the whole end. I'm at a complete loss of words as to what to say to that. I mean, what can you say? Try and fill in for me because I'm just at a loss.
Yeah, the Hudson-Odoi was unfortunate because it was literally straight after 4-2. And I thought if he buries that, it's again game on and kind of momentum goes back in our favour, doesn't it? The Yates one, for me, I mean, it's the caliber of player that it's fallen to. But I mean, I don't think I'd even be able to get a contact on him. But he's not that kind of player. He gets into some really good positions, Yates does, and we've seen that over the years how good he can get into a position. And I feel like that's just maybe people don't mark him for some strange reason. But he's not that kind of player. I just don't think he's really got that in his locker, to be honest.
We're not asking him to score an overhead kick. It's literally straight at him. He can take it down his chest if he wants to, or just like let it run across his body and take it down. There's just no technical ability whatsoever in what he does. It's just like, that's what I'd expect, like Fat Baz from the Dog and Duck to do on a Sunday morning. Like, he just
you've kind of answered your own question then, really, because he's got no technical ability. This is not Yates's thing. Like, have you ever seen him hit a volley and score? Like, or hit a volley at all?
He's a Premier League footballer. He should be doing better with that.
To be fair, like you said, Adam, he gets himself into some really good positions. And in the Championship, the season we got up, he got himself into some good positions and actually made the right contact. You look at the header at Sheffield United, there'll be others as well, because I think he got 9 goals in that season. But the only defence I kind of give him on that is that he's stretching a bit. But when he actually made the contact, I actually thought he'd scored, because every Martinez just stood still and looked to the side thinking, oh, that's going to go in the net. And it like drifted wide. And I was like, oh, for God's sake.
But yeah, I think you kind of answered your own question, Christian. He's unfortunately not got that technical ability. People know what my opinion on him with me. He's like Marmite with me. Like one week I think he's brilliant, the other week I think he's absolutely terrible.
There is this notion really with Yates, what has kept up with him from the Championship, that he's good in both boxes. Well, with respect, he's not scored in the Premier League. And
If Yates' scores were in the Trent, since that's come out, I don't think he's scored.
You know, he was a bit unlucky, but he did score at Bournemouth away last season, which got, I mean, Bolly's big head was just offside. But I can think of some ways he's got into great positions this season. I think there was the Brighton game where there was a header. There's one a few weeks back where I think he saved at point blank range. I can't remember who it was against. Forgive me for that, but I'm sure there was another one a few weeks ago where a pretty point blank range. There was the one where he swiveled on the spin, didn't he? That was Bournemouth way, which is a bit unlucky, really. That was a snapshot. But like you said, Adam, he gets into some great positions, but when you get into them positions, you've got to at least hit the target, you know what I mean, and make the keeper work there.
Yeah, I'm not gonna give him too much slack, because I don't think I'd get anywhere near the ball, to be honest. Never mind.
You're not a Premier League footballer, mate. That's
it. I am better than Yates.
I don't know. It's weird as well, because I mean, like, that is another thing. I sort of obviously that basically wrapped up the game at that point. Villa just saw it out pretty comfortably, and that was that. But I mean, it's a bit weird that Yates came on before someone like Reina, for example, when we're chasing the match. I mean, don't get me wrong, as bad as the midfield pairing were, I did think that was a strange decision, because, you know, you're chasing the game, so you're still in the game. Like, even though it's 4-2 down, you know, it's just one of those topsy-turvy encounters where Forest still actually have a chance. So I thought surely at that point you bring on an attacking midfielder before a more defensive midfielder.
I guess with our easy, we've got cut open in the first half, you kind of don't want to go down a route where you concede in like 6, you know what I mean? I saw it as it. Do you know, someone said to me at 3-0, oh, you lost the game 4-2. I think we would have ran back to the A42 and got back on it, because, like I said earlier, it looked like we're just going to completely go under. You know, when Gibbs White was getting them all in the huddle, you kind of think, Jesus Christ, this is like a side who's bottom of the league and like Sheffield United, and what's kind of happening? So that's another little spin of a positive, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, but alas, I mean, like I said, it's weird, because obviously we've lost 4-2, but I mean, on the face of it, I think if you said to someone, like you said earlier, is, oh, Forest will lose by 2-goal margin at Villa Park, I don't think many people would have been particularly, like, shocked by that. It's just one of those things. It's frustrating, like I said, in the manner we lost, because most of those goals were avoidable. But
you look at it last year when we lost 2-0 there, and Villa, in my opinion, were absolutely dreadful that day. They wouldn't have played any worse under Emery at home, apart from when he knocked me out of your last man standing against Stevenage Lee, but that's another conversation. But and we lost 2-0 there, and we didn't really lay a glove on him, did we? So,
no, I mean,
attacking-wise, we're fine. We, I mean, this people are, I don't see what's any different under Nuno from Cooper. Attacking wise, we are far, far better. The proof's in the pudding, as Sky Sports did on Monday Night Football. We've got nearly double goals under Nuno from what we had under Cooper, but it's just the defensive side. If his defence was as good as an attack, we'd be probably the top half.
Yeah.
But it isn't, unfortunately.
Well, I think not only that, in terms of what's different, I think you only need eyes to know what's different. Yeah, we are still making the same defensive mistakes, but every game you can tell what we're trying to play, how we're trying to play. Under Cooper, I used to find a lot that you look at the team sheet and you think, right, there's two attackers there, but one usually plays on the wing and one usually plays up front. And you just find that they'd play wherever. When the ball went up there, you were hoping something sticks, or you were relying on like a 20-yard screamer flying in the top corner. Whereas I think under Nuno, at least, yeah, defensively, it's still the same players, so we're going to still get the same errors. But how we set up is completely different now. Yesterday, we went to Villa, who were fourth, with Danilo and Dominguez centre mid. I mean, it's backfired, definitely. But that is pretty bold, I think, to play those two in centre mid against a team like Villa.
Definitely. I think as well,
we got caught out with it, to be honest.
Well, I don't agree. I think we backfired because of poor performance. Like, that's it. I mean, how can you account for Dominguez playing that poorly, for example? Like, someone who's been so good when he's played this season.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a battle between Dominguez and Danilo and McGinn and Luiz. And who do you fancy to win that battle on paper? Probably Luiz and McGinn.
I think it was massive yesterday that Sangare couldn't play, because Sangare with one of those two, and I think it's probably a different game, to be fair. Even with the Niakate situation.
Sangare played at home and we won 2-0. So
The home game, Sangare was extremely good.
You can't say that, Adam. Certain people would think that for £30 million he hasn't delivered anything whatsoever.
I've named another game he was good in.
Missing
I'm so
half
sorry.
The season, not done anything, not so
played well for 4 minutes against Newcastle, that's it.
We don't deserve nice things as a fan.
I'll go back in my hole.
Social media went from, in a day, if we desperately need Sangare back, to realising he's injured, and then it was always a waste of money, he's a crock,
How dare he, did he have his ankle hated by Sadio Mane?
It went back to yesterday, we need him back again, so...
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Hopefully he's back soon, because fair, like, you know, for £30 million, we want to see him playing week in, week out. You want, for a club like us, when you spent that kind of money on a player, as we said with Nico Williams last season, when you spent the pounds on them players, you need to be seeing them week in, week out, obviously playing well. So hopefully he'll be back soon.
I'm going to have a little red hot take. Sorry to take that away from Forest All Over podcast, but Ibrahim Sangare is going to come back on a Heroes like rebound, similar to Danny Fox.
No, because he hasn't played as bad as Danny Fox. Danny Fox is one of the worst I've ever had.
You know what I mean? I think
Ren and Loddie would be the one, wouldn't it?
Ren and Loddie, Heroes.
He was completely written off, and then in the end, he was.
Yeah, everyone realised why he was starting left back. Yeah.
The redemption will come.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And everyone will go, oh, I'm glad he's our player. That's what will happen.
What has Sangare played? 11 games. Give the bloke some time, Jesus. Come on.
And let's remember that just because you're £30 million, it doesn't mean that you're immune to fatigue. It doesn't mean you're immune to getting injured. Let's move on quick.
It's I was actually going to cover, to be fair, part of player performance. I was going to cover Sangare, so you may as well get over it now before we've stepped on it. Thoughts. I just found the whole discourse about that absolutely baffling. It was just ridiculous. I mean, it's all well and good saying, we expect more from him, and fair. He's taken time to adapt to the league, but come on, I saw someone that hit nail on the head yesterday. If we go down this season, he'll be in the Champions League next year for someone else. Yeah. He won't be like that. That's how good he is. And like, we're just completely willing to write him off. Yeah, Danny Tring. Yeah, and we're just completely like willing to write him off just because, based on what? Like, is it because he's not an academy boy? Is it because he's not from Nuneaton or, you know, anything like that? It just fries my head that, like, I mean, you know, we've got a player of that quality and we're so happy to just discard him already. It just
let's
seems
be honest.
Stupid.
I think we all expect more from him because of the player, obviously, the value of the player he is, and he's been built up to. You know, I bet he's looking at himself in the mirror really, and thinking, Jesus, I wish he'd have stayed at PSV because they're flying in the Eredivisie and in the last 16 of the Champions League. But, you know, he's come to our club. I like this notion of, oh, he doesn't look like he wants to be here. Well, where has that kind of notion come from? Because he was the first one over when we scored to Chris Wood when we scored at Newcastle. Yeah, is it because he's kind of not coming round to the fans after games and giving everybody a fist pump, etc., to the crowd? Sorry. I mean, he wants to be here because he's come here. You know, he's stayed at PSV in his comfort zone, won an Eredivisie, which I believe he's not won with PSV, and played in the Champions League. He's given that up to come to Forest. So, you know,
it's a player we've courted for 2 years as well.
We all expect more from him, of course we do, and we'd all like to see for more from him because there has been certain games, which I must add as well, Cooper played him out of position when he was built up as this number six. Give the bloke some time, Jesus.
Yeah, I'll just add as well, I think Christian and Rhys has both said everything that I'm thinking, but the only other thing that I'm going to put on record is that if he didn't play in the same position as Ryan Yates, who's from Nottingham, who's born and bred, bleeds red and white, there wouldn't be such a, you know, a quick element to constantly pounce on everything he does. It's because essentially when he plays, Ryan Yates doesn't. Some people don't like that. And I maintain that that's the hill I'm dying on, basically, with this criticism.
No, I see it. I completely see it. Yeah.
I think social media is a poor barometer into it as well, to be honest.
Redemption arch comes because Mangala's left, and I feel like Sangare will largely play in that role, and he can play on the half turn, and he can protect our back four, and I think we will be much better for it. And I think people have just got to have a little bit of patience. I know we've got 13 games to go now, or is it 12?
12 left. Yeah,
12. I think
he'll be back in. He's a huge part of that. Simple as that.
I think he'll be back in next week against Liverpool.
He's got to. And when
we're singing rocking all over the world at City Ground next week, people will be looking at Ibrahim Sangare saying, man of the match.
Hopefully he's walking around the whole ground and giving fist pumps to everybody, and then it might
he'll end up being injured for it and not playing.
Yeah. No, Reece, unless he's holding a Forest scarf in the middle of the centre circle singing Mollick in Time before kickoff, that's it. He's not showing passion. I hate our fans sometimes.
Every player's like, you know, personally different in the characteristics, aren't they? I mean, I always go back to like Lewis Grab and people. You know, because he obviously he's not, you know, shouting and screaming at people.
It's not the 1980s anymore. Like,
you know, the notions are a bit silly sometimes. They really kind of are. But I just hope, you know, like I said, the synopsis of it is, you know, I do want to see more from Sangare. I want him to be playing week in, week out for. But I have got this element of patience. It's his first ever season in the Premier League. He's come to a brand new country in a brand new league. And he's also, as well, he's come from a side who are going to be beating fodder like Go Ahead Eagles and Vitesse every week and attacking to a side where a lot of the time you're going to be defensive because we're a counter-attacking side, you know. It was the same with Remo Freude last season. He come from Atalanta, an attacking side. He comes to a defensive side, asked to do defensive work, and he looks a bit out of sorts. Well, he don't look out of sorts back in Italy because Bologna are now fourth in the league. And he was steaming in to get on the end of a goal the other night, I seen.
Before we do, I will say that I do think that had we had Freud in his current system with Nuno, I think he'd be a lot better than what we had last season.
Yeah, that sailed, unfortunately.
And I think ultimately, I think it'd be the same with Sangare for what it's worth. I think that when he comes, I mean, we've only got a small sample size, but against Newcastle, Sangare was incredible. Mm. He basically won that midfield battle on his own.
Well, there was the article this week, wasn't it, from John Percy, where Nuno said he's got high hopes for him. So, you know, he clearly sees him as a major part of his plan. So hopefully, the injury's not bad and he can and he's, I think the hope as well that he's kind of fully fit and he can get in and, you know, get up to speed and we can get going and stay up.
Definitely, that's the plan. Anyway, we'll now move on to some Slept On It thoughts. A little bit later than usual, but here we go.
Red Side of the Trent. Slept On It thoughts.
So we'll start with Osh Jones, who says, awful first half, but recovered well and good character to make a fist of its second half. God knows what the thinking was behind Musa instead of Toffa at left back. Villa were superb, so credit to them for making us look average at times today. I think average is a bit of a compliment, really. Sam says, poor first half, good second half. Thought Origi looked very good when he came on. Danilo had a few, had very good moments second half, and Cho played very well, so unlucky with his chances. I generally think if we didn't let in the first and the third goals, which are just poor marking, we could have come away with a result from that match. Very frustrating coming off the back of a really good game against West Ham that we can't pick up another result and get a bit of run of form going on to the next game. BCP says, this one's on Nuno, but the players also never turned up until it was far too late. Disappointed with the lack of effort in first half. Snowboard Pete says, what frustrates me the most, we go from last week's performance to 40 minutes of trash. I know Villa have a great home record and in the top four, but you made it very easy for them and there was an uphill battle afterwards. Anyway, Hudson-Odoi is getting better with regular game time. I must admit, I did think he was one of the few bright sparks, Hudson-Odoi. Tom Newton says, after a dominant display last week, we gift the team four goals once we're away from an NG postcode. Cannot understand changing the formation to play near Carse at left back with Toff on the bench. They targeted that area all first half and we lost our way. Villa went up a gear when they needed to. Premier Elliot said, is your team on a bad form? Your team on bad form, sorry, and riddled with injuries, and call Charity FC, where we'll come to your ground, give you way too much respect, give you soft goals and some lovely points on the boards. Other than that, only Hudson-Odoi and Neco played well. I was in top one, said, what a difference a week makes. Alex says, that first half was on the worst on the Nuno, didn't seem to have a clue what we were doing. Scored from a set piece, which is nice, and a great goal from Morgan, but ultimately shot ourselves in the foot for the 117th time this season and killed the game ourselves. Peter J. Chapman says, it should have done better against a top four team, so it's a vast improvement from the end of Cooper's reign. We look better going forward. Centre midfield looked empty, though. We're as good as any team in the bottom 10, so I think we'll be okay. Gareth D said, strange decision to play near Carter at left back. I mean, you sense a bit of a recurring theme here from the Forest fans. You can't get a team of Villa's quality a free goal advantage to expect anything from the game. It was always going to be a tough ask to get anything from yesterday regardless. The fourth goal from Orban Mavele's mistake killed us in the end. Ian Allsop says, losing I can take, it's a manner of it I can't. Does a team really have to try hard to score past us? No, we gift goals at an alarming rate. The saying goes, strikers win games, defenders win titles. Scoring we do pretty well, but our defence is badly letting us down. Echoing what you said, Rhys. Rhys Coy says, just about pulled it around to regain some dignity from what was looking like a possible drumming. Bold calls from Santo at half-time have to be applauded. Shows that he won't accept a poor performance no matter the player. Weirdly, and I mean weirdly, it felt like we missed Tavares, which is a very, very point. It looked a bit destabilised at left-back, didn't we? Keith Nossett in Function says, Villa like the Death Star. They had one obvious weakness that Forrest didn't exploit because of Nuno's choices. He was totally outfoxed by Emery in the first half. The changes and the fight in the second were positive, but too late. Shows what a week's training can't achieve. And last but not least, again, thank you all for getting these into us. Mark Baker said, really think we looked tired and leggy. Another game of if, buts and maybes from us, but Villa's pressing and movement was exceptional and caused many of our mistakes. Sometimes you have to admit you're beaten by a much better team. Thank you all for getting your Slept On It thoughts into us. Much appreciated, so we can't go through them all. We're now going to run through a few player performances from predictions. So, Rhys, I'll start with you. And again, I know we sort of covered it in some detail and obviously spoke about Sangare and stuff now, but very, very unusually poor performance from Nico Dominguez for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I touched on it earlier, didn't I? We went with Danilo and Dominguez in centre mid, which, you know, to be fair, I think most people advocated because we wanted the same 11. Having Tavares out kind of affected the balance of the team, didn't it? Because he's built up that relationship with Callum Hudson-Odoi, and that kind of went all over the whole team, I think. And I mean, Dominguez just had a day yesterday where he just wasn't at the races, wasn't he? I mean, him and Danilo, the second goal, you look at the second goal, him and Danilo, like Adam said earlier, are just marking thin air, and Douglas Luiz, you know, comes on to it and sweeps it into the corner. It was just, I think there was one early doors where Douglas Luiz just barged him off the ball and put him on his backside. And then you're kind of thinking, right, this is going to be a physical battle. And it looks like they're going to kind of win it because McGinn gets himself stuck in as well, doesn't he? So, yeah, an off day yesterday. You know, it's just one of them, unfortunately. He's probably another one who's looking at the Serie A table and seeing his old club sat in a Champions League position and thinking, bloody hell. But, yeah, I think Dominguez overall has been pretty good for us. It's just, I think, too many people, including him, had a real off day yesterday. As, you know, the hospital ball for the fourth, it just was a bit of a disaster one yesterday, really, for him.
Yeah, massively. Lee, I'm going to come and give you Divock Origi, who I suppose many of us thought was done. Forest, I thought we were all expecting him to go to the MLS, expecting to cut his loan, obviously.
Dictating the play, Adam, told you.
Yeah, obviously, probably because, you know, obviously Chris Wood got injured. That's probably why we've kept him. But I have to say, fair play to him. He's done pretty well in the limited appearances he had. He scored against Bristol City, albeit fortuitously. And but yesterday, I thought, obviously, he played a big part in the second goal yesterday, last week against West Ham. But I thought he played pretty well. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll be honest up front. I'm glad you've picked Origi for me because the bits that I did see, well, I've seen the majority of the second half and he played the whole of the second half, so happy days. Yeah, he was really good. I've said it before with other players that I think when someone's out of the team, all you ask when they come back into the team is that they show that they want a shirt, basically. And I think that was certainly Origi's best performance in a Forest shirt, I think. He just seemed to link up really well with everyone else in the final third. His ball through for Gibbs White's goal was excellent. And yeah, that's what we kind of hoped we'd signed when we first saw we got him. I think Origi, throughout his career, has always been a striker that he's probably not going to, for want of a better similarity, a bit like Matt Derbyshire was for us. It does bright things and positive things, but it's usually not always involving scoring 20 goals. So, yeah, it was really positive. And I think with Chris Wood out injured, it's something that he needs to kind of... There is a role for him in the team now, I think. Certainly in the squad, sorry. Obviously, with the settled four, I can think of Alanga, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White and Taiwo is kind of... It's going to take a lot to break that, I think. But let's face it, Origi's not averse to being the kind of super sub, is he? That's what he's kind of done. It's certainly what he did all the time at Liverpool. So, yeah, I think there's certainly a role for him. And, yeah, yesterday was extremely positive for Origi.
I think, did he clip it over for Alanga as well?
Yeah, I think he did.
He did.
He should have had two assists,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Well, he probably scored one of the most famous goals in Liverpool's history, didn't he, really? As a sub. The corner one against Barcelona. I'm not saying anymore. Yeah. I hate it, but we'll move on.
Did he score in Champions League final as well, Origi?
Yeah, he did. That. Yeah. Oh, that dreadful final. Oh, yeah, move on.
Adam, I'm going to give you Niakate because I felt that he had a very mixed game. Obviously, most of it wasn't really his fault. I felt that when he actually was put the centre-back, he looked pretty solid. Also, cleared up off the line, scores. But was also routinely targeted in the first half by a very ruthless Aston Villa side. So a very mixed day for him. But what did you think?
Yeah, like you could probably call him Jekyll and Hyde a little bit in a sense. Why is it when we've got an obvious weakness, teams kind of target it, but when other teams have got this, like we don't do anything. Like we might target it once and then just retreat. I don't. It's very strange. It's a very Forest thing, but. To be fair to Niakate, I thought he redeemed himself in the second half. I thought he played pretty well at centre-half alongside Andy O until the mistake. So I think fair play to him. I think he'll be the first to admit that when he's having an off day, he'll put his hand up and kind of admit that. I was surprised that he maybe didn't like try and maybe switch with Murillo when he was having such a bad day because you could just... He doesn't want to be out wide there against Leon Bailey, who's arguably... one of the best right wingers in the league this season. He's on absolute red hot form is Leon Bailey. So I think anyone would struggle against him this season, especially at Villa Park where he's absolutely flying. But no, fair play to Niakate. At least he kept going. He didn't even celebrate the goal. So it obviously meant that he must have been fuming because why would you, especially when it's a consolation at the time. So I think fair play to him. You know what you're going to get out of him most of the time. He is a leader in this team, even if he doesn't wear the armband. I thought bit Jekyll and Hyde from him personally, but he'll draw a line through it, I think, and we'll move on to the next one where we've got two games to go into. Really, it's a bit of a championship kind of fixture list this week, thankfully. Like the next one's on Wednesday, isn't it? So exciting.
Yeah, and we'll look at that now, actually. So obviously Man United's in the FA Cup, fifth rounds. That's it, two games from Wembley, am I right in saying, I believe? Because the thing is, very stupidly held for the semi-finals. But still, all the same, it's a good chance to go there. So we'll start with that, Reese. Obviously, United had a very poor result the weekend, which is rather amusing. But what do you think of our chances this season? Obviously, we had a lot of joy playing them with Nuno early this season, just in the home game. The only real weakness was the goalkeeper. But how are you sort of seeing us going?
I mean, United are just... I watched them last weekend, obviously, against Luton. You know, it was a kind of a big game for us with Luton battling down at the bottom. And, you know, the 2-0 up, what was it, after 5 minutes maybe? And you're thinking, you know, a proper quality side now control this game and they probably, you know, win 3 or 4-0. And what do? They let Luton back into it and then it becomes a game. You know, and then... You know, they've had the unlucky news for them this week that Rasmus Højlund is now injured. I mean, he's just started getting going. And then yesterday, what did they do? They provide a stinker of performance at home and lose to Fulham. So, absolutely delighted from our sense because that's exactly what I wanted to see. And I think we'll beat them. And I think we'll beat them by the same scoreline of what we did in the league. But, you know, being with the neutral head, it depends what United want to turn up. If they want to turn up and play as what with the players they've got, with the ability of players they've got, then they'll look to beat us. But if they turn up like they did the home game in the league, where like Morgan Gibbs-White famously said in the huddle, look, these guys don't want it, we can turn them over. And like you said, Christian, apart from Matt Turner's mistake, they didn't look like scoring that night. I mean, Rashford made, you know, the classic cliche on his pod, he may as well have come and sat with me and you, Adam, in Upper Bridgeford. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. But it was great to see their run of form get extinguished yesterday, wasn't it? And with no surprise to me that it was fair, I was having a debate with a couple of fans on Twitter. I said they'll be first on Match of the Day because they've lost, because it's Manchester United. You know, they're the big guys in town, and they was duly first on. So, and they're on BBC. We're on BBC, aren't we, on Wednesday night? So I'm sure it'll be 99% of scrutinising why Manchester United messed up on Saturday and 1% of Forest talk. So, yeah, hopefully we can beat them. I mean, we've quietly said in our chat it would be very Forest to go and beat them, then draw someone like a Coventry away in the quarterfinals, thinking, yeah, we're going to get to Wembley again and then get him beat. So... hopefully that doesn't happen and hopefully we can win. And then, like you say, Christian, I agree with you. You know, the semi-finals being at Wembley, it takes some romance away from the cup for me personally. But yeah, one game from Wembley would be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it really would be, especially given all the replays we've had along the way. Lee, I find
this
that
can't when... be a replay at least.
Thank the Lord. Lee, I find that when, I think the biggest thing is when United don't have a focal point, they seem a much weaker side. I mean, it's well documented that they concede a lot of chances anyway. I think only Sheffield United and I think Luton have conceded, or Burnley, sorry, have given up more chances and more shots on goal than United have, which is absolutely absurd to think they're sitting in the European position with like minus one goal difference. But whoever it is. But that is maybe something we could target, because I felt that when we played them at obviously in the home game, again, Rashford was up front then. It just didn't seem to be firing. Obviously, Anthony was on the wing that night. And obviously, what we know wasn't good at all. But it does seem that maybe it's a structural issue we can maybe try and target.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is big for us that Oyland's not available. It's funny, actually, because I was, for the programme, I interviewed a fan from the opposite club. And the one I've interviewed for the FA Cup game, I asked if the FA Cup was kind of seen as a successful season, and he kind of said no, they've got to finish in the top four. So I just think it'll be interesting to see it with Højlund injured now. I wonder if he will be tempted to rest other attackers as well. So it will be interesting to see what team they play, and what team they play probably would change my prediction, I suppose. That said, I am going positive and I think we probably will win again. I have to disagree with Reese because I don't think Coventry are going to beat Maidstone. I think Maidstone are going to be one game away from Wembley.
can you imagine if we would ever lost to them? God,
imagine. That would be a meltdown, very strange, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we'll win. I think it'll be just for the sake of a different scoreline. I think it'd be nice to finally be on the right side of a 3-2. So yeah, I'm going to go for 3-2.
I'd just add to your selection, they did go pretty full strength in the last round against Newport.
They did, but I just think things are different now. Now they've had the defeat against Fulham and they've had a setback in the quest to get the top four, and Hoyland's injured as well and he's out for a few weeks. Can they really justify? I mean, they might go full strength. They might do. I just think it's very interesting.
It's kind of the only... I know United need to get in the top four because a club of that size will be wanting to play Champions League football, but it's the only trophy you can win, Ten Hag. Will he kind of see that as a win in terms of, with obviously Jim Radcliffe now coming in, of kind of preserving his status as manager? It obviously did that last season with the Carabao Cup in T1. So, yeah, I'd expect him to go full strength personally, but we'll see on Wednesday night.
My prediction is he'll be sat regardless, Ten Hag. He's not good enough manager at United. Guy's an absolute fraud. But which probably means we're going to lose now. Adam, obviously it's the seventh time in 2 years we're playing Man United, which, considering we haven't played them for 23 years, is quite an achievement before that. But what are your... Obviously, again, another key issue is the midfield battle, because time and time again this season, United seems to be overrun in midfield, much like we were at Villa. Is that something you think we can maybe try and get at?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Casemiro looks like he's had about 30 donuts this season, unfortunately. There's so many late tackles, that guy. I don't know what's wrong with him. Last season,
he loves a yellow card, Casemiro.
Last season, he was arguably one of the best players I saw come to the City Ground in every game. I think he was unplayable. I was going to say unbelievable and then wanted to go unplayable. But yeah, really, really good from Casemiro. But yeah, definitely a game where we can get in and amongst it. I wouldn't be surprised to see a rotated side from Man United, like Reece says, but still pretty full strength, like the likes of Scott McTominay and that come in. But for us, I wouldn't be surprised for a little bit of change as well. It wouldn't shock me to see Ryan Yates come in centre midfield with either Danilo or Dominguez, and hopefully Sangare is at least on the bench to come on and get in some minutes before his absolute stunning performance against Liverpool on the Saturday. I'm just gonna keep putting positive energy out in there in the world, so hopefully it will happen. Yeah, no, I think we'll go fairly strong. Nuno's obviously already told many media outlets how much he loves the FA Cup and how much it means to him and him watching English football when he was younger. So, and yeah, almost got success with Wolves. So I think we'll go pretty full strength. I think it will be tight, and I think we'll win 1-0.
Yeah, I actually am going to go with the same scoreline. I think we're going to win 1-0 as well. It might come late, I think. But I do think we'll eventually wear him down and score. I think just as bad as our defending can be, we saw against West Ham how good it could be as well. I just think that, you know, this will probably be used as an excuse to Nuno, give a massive kick up the arse and they'll respond well, is what that's how I'm going to approach it. And hopefully, if we can get a result, it can give us some good momentum going into Saturday, which we have high-flying Liverpool, Reece, which is not obviously injury hit now, but as we saw against Luton, if you poke the bear as such, they're not afraid to put you into the ground pretty much. How do you see that game going? Because, I mean, I felt last season there was a sort of like, oh, you know, we might get something. Whereas this, it feels very much like, yeah, this is going to be a big ask to get anything from that game.
I'm guessing we're just going to kind of cover the United game and Liverpool game together with a close proximity then.
It depends if we win. Yeah. We might. Depends if we win.
It's a 5-0 defeat. We might just skip over Man United. I'm just looking at their team yesterday.
What FA
United.
Cup? If we lose 5-0, what FA Cup?
Just looking at their team yesterday, United, I mean, they started an academy player instead of Anthony, which kind of sums up his time at United, didn't he? They have got quite a few injuries as well.
They brought him on for 40 seconds and it was his birthday, Anthony.
make a wish, Anthony. I mean, they're missing Shaw, obviously Mason Mount's been long-term, Lisandro Martinez, obviously Hoyland, so we'll see with that. now we're going to another side who, because they've got a couple of injuries, it's the whole team's out, according to the media. I mean, there was an article from the BBC I saw where there was even putting like a player who'd played half an hour in the Europa League this season as an absentee. I thought, different for them lot, isn't it, at the top of the league. I mean, with Liverpool, I mean, we're not sure whether Salah, Nunes, I think Trent might be out. It's kind of, if they get them players back, what kind of team they're going to put out against us. I mean, if they're at pretty much full strength, I mean, they're flying this season, aren't they, Liverpool? I mean, the Klopp saying he's burnt out, he's kind of gave him that energy, hasn't it, to kind of push on again, I think. So it's going to be a tough afternoon. I can't predict them to win. I'm not predicting them to win. No chance in a million years I'm predicting Liverpool to win. So we'll go with what happened last year, 1-0 home win. But it'll be but that's with my very biased Forest head on from a neutral perspective. It's going to be a very, very tough game. If Liverpool, like I said, have got the likes of Salah and, to be fair, Nunes, who's quite in form this season, you know, you look at the away game where, you know, the Murillo mistake and they completely sprung on us with like six players. If we make mistakes at the back, they are the perfect team to completely punish us. So as we made two mistakes up there, didn't we? Where Toffolo and Turner got in a mess and Sangare didn't track the runner for the second, for example. So, yeah, we'll see. That, I mean, the atmosphere should be as good as it should ever be in the Premier League for that type of game, Liverpool at home. These are the type of games what we're in the Premier League for, aren't you? And last season was, you know, a bit of a fairy tale beating them, really. You're on mute.
Absolutely. What about you? I mean, it's going to be tough. I kind of feel that with their injuries, you know, obviously, it's more Kelleher, I think, because remember last season we had a proper go at Liverpool and Alisson made that outrageously good save from Yates, which was probably the best save I've seen at City Ground from opposing goalkeeper, at least since Dean Gherkin decided to turn the booth on repeatedly whenever he played against us for whatever reason. But what do you think is going to happen?
I have to say, first, my heart bleeds for Liverpool. They lose Diogo Jota, and then who pops in for him? Mo Salah. What a nightmare. I can see why BBC are making such a big thing out of it.
Did you not know that they're the first team
to ever get lack of strength in depth, one of the top teams in the country, in the world, have got. I mean, it really is hard not to feel sorry for those poor buggers. Anyway, moving on. I actually think we might win. And it's nothing to do with the game. It's more to do with the fact that I won't be there. Thanks to the Not-So-Fay for giving me a cup semi-final. It means I won't be there. So I think we'll win. I don't really know why. I just think, like you've just said, Christian, I just think the goalkeeper is a massive part of what they do. And I think, like you say, last season, we probably would have scored once, if not twice, if it had not been for Alisson. So yeah, I think if we test this keeper, I think we can find a way through. I'll go for goals again. I think it might be, 2-1 to Forest. And I think we might come from behind as well.
Is he definitely injured then, Alisson?
He's out for international break. Yeah.
International break.
Like I said, it depends who's back and who's not, isn't it, for him? You know,
No Trent, no Szoboszlai.
Salah.
Szoboszlai might play tonight in the cup final. Obviously, we're recording on Sunday.
Okay. It'd be so good as well to, like, obviously, it'd be a massive 3 points for us, but to just disrupt them winning the title would be incredible.
Adam, what about you?
Yeah, tough one. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of emotions, lots of history between the two sides, as there were last season in the home game where Dean Henderson, just pulling off like Gordon Banks-esque saves. Why do I love like referring to old players? Dean Gherkin's a great shout, by the way, Christian. That's like so.
He's in the same category as like Rudy Gestaers and Stephen Dobby. Whenever he saw Forrest, he was like,
Matt,
you know.
Smith.
Maybe
we should do an episode of like Forest Nemesis. Like,
yeah, he being gold.
Thankfully, the Liverpool Forest Nemesis Diogo Jota is injured. He always scores past us as well.
At least we've got good nemesis in some team. Like, not just like Matt Smith, scoring, he's scoring it out in League Two now.
He scored that he scored a brace for Wolves into when Mustafa Carriol scored that wilder from like 40 on.
we're definitely doing an Emesis segment at one point. That will come to a home near you. Absolutely. Lots of emotion. I think it's a third 3 PM kickoff in a row, which is nice for the match day going fan, obviously not having to muck about with travel and all that crap. So no, I think it sets up nicely to be a really good one. We'll want to get keep on winning at home as well on the back of West Ham last week. I think it'll be tight, and it will be, can we take our chances when we really want to? And I think from what we've seen of Nuno, we'll push forward, and it's just whether we can cut out their mistakes as we well know. So I think it'll be tight, and I'm going to go for a 1-0 win from last, like we did last season. Morgan Gibbs-White.
Oof. Oh, I think I'd give
penalty. Controversial penalty given by VAR.
I mean, that's funny. There's no way. Not in top farewell. Not like we saw that decision that Hossa got against Newcastle. There's no way they're giving anything against them.
And what I want to see is Klopp come on to the referee like gurning, absolutely furious.
The VAR panel will be Kenny Dalglish and Ian Rush now in the
Graham Souness, fourth official.
Yeah, just wheel them all out. It's like, oh yeah. No, I reckon I don't want to go against the grain because he's also just a win, but I feel like from a realistic perspective, I'm going to go for a Desmond's. I'm going to go for 2-2. I just don't see us. I mean, the fact that at least, Reece, you're not going to want to hear this. I think they're going to win the league. Personally, Liverpool. I think they're going to see it out. It'll be a Klopp's fairy tale ending, and we'll hear about it endlessly for decades.
Media's wet dream.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. I think what they've done this season without real defensive midfielder apart from Endo is pretty remarkable. I think all things considered, it shows what happens. Take Jordan Henderson out your midfield, you're going to win things. Who'd have thought it? Gareth
has won everything with that.
Passenger, mate. He's no different to Jimmy Traore. But I reckon he's going to... I can't see us keeping a clean sheet against them. I just think that... But equally, I think that we'll give them hell. We'll go for it. And I think that I saw... As good as I think Kelleher is and can be, I still think he's a little green at times. We saw that with Luton's goal at Anfield, where he just sort of parried it back into play straight to one of their players ahead and into off Benny for an open goal. I think we can get at them and cause some issues, especially with the injury situation they have. But I don't see us winning. But I think a point against them would be massive. I don't think anyone really would expect it. Anyone looking at that, it's not a 12:30 kickoff for a start. So it's immediately different to last year. I think even if they win today as well in the cup final, they're professional enough to just go, right, okay, on to the next one. Then they won't get like carried away with a trophy, which, because it's in their nature to win things.
Not a Carabao Cup.
Exactly. So
Liverpool, it was a tournament a few years ago. Klopp wasn't bothered about it, and then he realised that Pep Guardiola is winning all these cups and his record looks loads better than Klopp. So it's like, oh, actually, we'll bother about that.
But
it should be a bit of a ding-dong, shouldn't it, really? Because they're going to come and have a real go.
Definitely. We're going to have to be our very best. And I think a few days after United might be a bit tricky, but...
Just worth adding, Liverpool also play Southampton in the FA Cup in the week as well.
They do, yeah, but that they'll play their B team for that. Just romp that. But
before we kind of wrap up, I mean, we spoke, haven't we, in our group between us. We've got 12 Premier League games left. I've earmarked 8 kind of games what realistically we can get either wins or draws from. I think the 4 you look at where you'd realistically say the opposition's going to win are probably Liverpool at home, City at home, Brighton away, and Tottenham away. So
even Brighton away, to be honest, I think that's in between their Roma games.
Well, we've got a point there last year, so that's good for us. Obviously, they're going to.
I think if they were out of Europe, it might be different, but that's going to be
so. Maybe it's another one. But I mean, like with like the bookies will have Brighton massive favourites. Example that game, won't they? But these type of games, you can't go into the mentality of, oh, it's a complete bonus, because you've got to try and get any, as we know in the Premier League, we got results against Liverpool last season. We lost to teams like Leicester, who were bottom of the league at the time. But, Like,
it's going to be a big push from here on out, and I think
every game's big, really.
So, every game's going to be big. 12 games to go now. We're approaching quite a serious stage this season, and we're not in a good position. So we need some wins in pretty quickly. I think it's worth noting that I think the points per game total since Nuno took over would have us in about 10th.
Yeah, so I said that yesterday.
Which is good. You know, we have to take something from that. So, and we are scoring goals, which is the hardest thing to do in football. So it's just a case of sure I come back, which hopefully we can start to do. But anyway, thank you all for tuning in. I think we had a peak about 45. So many thanks for giving up your Sunday morning to hear us talk about Nottingham Forest Football Club's defeats. It's much appreciated. And thanks for your comments and sets on it thoughts and whatnot. And yeah, we might be back with you for a midweek review after the United game, depending how that goes. But we'll definitely be one on next Sunday to talk through the United, well, they're definitely the Liverpool game, because that'll be the back to Premier League. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in, listeners and viewers. And until next time, come on, you Reds.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.